Rick Holden is the former Premier League star who made the Isle of Man his home. The Yorkshireman enjoyed a career in the footballing spotlight, which took in clubs like Watford, Oldham Athletic and Manchester City, among others. He's now spent half of his lifetime living in the island.
I first came to the Isle of Man in, June 1993 on holiday, just with my wife and my son William, who lives here still, 30 years later. And yeah, that's my first experience of the place.
How come you came to the Isle of Man for that trip? Why did you choose the Isle of Man?
Well, it was probably because William was 3 or 4 months old and we just said, well, let's have a holiday and go somewhere different rather than go abroad, stick where felt it was quite comfortable. So we just sort of knew of the Isle of Man, obviously, if you do. But so we just sort it out and came over and enjoyed it.
And in what way did you enjoy it? Where did you go? What did you do?
I can remember just doing the sights with the wife and the toddler, the baby in and around. You know, we just went on the horse trams. I remember that one. We were on the mountain railway, Laxey Wheel, all that. Just, and just generally chilling out in the hotel and stuff. That was it.
Did that sow a seed to move into the Isle of Man, or did the fact that you ended up living in the Isle of Man just happen by coincidence?
It probably did a background seed, because I've always been interested in nice, picturesque places to live. It's the same in Yorkshire. I chose nice places to live, or I grew up in a nice place. And it probably sort of put a seed in. And we met some nice people and we got invited to one person's house, still no. Obviously, I got spotted because it was the height of my career as well. But I didn't really think about it much more, even when I visited with Oldham Athletic in 94. For a pre-season tournament against Man City and the Island side. I didn't really think about it. It was only till about when I joined Blackpool that I saw it again on the horizon from Squires Gate, from the training ground and South Shore. So then I started to think, well, it might be an idea.
Before we talk about more about the Isle of Man, let's talk a bit more about you, your background. So working class family, Yorkshire, father, football, whatever. How did the path to becoming a footballer?
No, well, it's totally different to that. It's, I would say, middle class background, but working class parents who, obviously educated. And my dad was a physicist. It's the easiest way to call that, Rog. My mother, an English teacher. I remember the early days in back streets, terraced houses in Cone, but then we moved to Yorkshire. I was born in Yorkshire anyway before that, because my dad taught at a private school in Gargrave outside Skipton. So he moved back to Yorkshire when I was about 6. Then we lived in a lovely village called Emsey outside Skipton. And then I went to sort of an 11 plus thing we had in those days. It sort of adapted 11 plus, and I went to Skipton Grammar School. It was obvious to those around and even myself that I was, I was handy at sport, and I played everything then at the grammar school, apart from football, association football, soccer. We didn't play that. They do now at Ermysted's grammar school. So I played for local village team, Cub Scouts teams, and then local teams, but rugby and cricket and tennis and everything else. So it's and then a full education, O levels and A levels and all that.
So how did football rear its ugly head then?
I wouldn't say it was denied. I mean, we had these mammoth games of football going on eclectically all over the school, but it wasn't on the curriculum. But no, I mean, I got to the age of 18 and blobbed my physics A-level, like you do, because we were tough in those days, So I resat it, and then a year out, I played for a team called Harrogate Railway, usual few quid in your boot and that. And but I was also playing cricket for Saltaire, a couple of quid there, and rugby union first team for Wharfdale, which is in like a national north team now, good side. And so I was toying with the idea, and then I passed my physics and went went to Carnegie College to do a degree in human movement, and played for the college team and studied and played for Harrogate Railway. And then we'd play these games in midweek against pro sides of college. Carnegie first team was Leeds Poly, and good players. I mean, the PE course and the human movement course attracted a lot of athletes. The idea was you would go into physical education in schools, teaching, or what is now a massive industry, sports science, if you could find a job. But my mates used to ridicule me, say, you just end up watching water and stuff like that, cleaning gyms. Now, I mean, it's the thing to do. We hammered Burnley in a game. Burnley features.
How old are you at this point, sorry?
Well, I'm 19, 20, okay. Quite 20 in 84 when I started. I was born in 64. And I got invited after we'd murdered Burnley in this game under the lights at Carnegie, 4-1. I was invited to train in with Burnley then. And talk about getting there from Leeds in those days was hard work. But 6 months in the reserves and then that's it, it's a start.
We'll come back to that in a moment. Were you interested in football as a kid? My first World Cup was 74. First FA Cup final I watched was 74. Can you think back on those?
Yeah, just slightly before that, I think. I've, unless it's memory laid down afterwards, it's 70 World Cup. 1970 FA Cup, I can definitely remember. But yeah, 74 was a World Cup that really set everyone's. And then the 78 one was unbelievable, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. But no, I was a football fanatic. And being in Yorkshire, every kid was Leeds United because they were...
The team of the time, weren't they?
Challenging with obviously others. Like they were big names, and we all wanted to be Leeds United players.
And,
you know.
And did you inherit this as well from your parents?
That's a funny thing. I mean, I've got funny stories about my dad's approach to it. He's a rugby player, a bit, you know. And
League.
No. Union. This is rugby union. Wow. League is more eastern than the west. It's west North Yorkshire. It's not a lot of rugby league. It's quite a conservative area in Elskipton. So, no, he was rugby union. He went to Cone Grammar School and he played rugby union and golf and that, but he wasn't really a football man. I mean, mum was an athlete, but she not really football. So football, my grandpa was a football fan. He supported Burnley. Because Skipton, a lot of them support Burnley over the border. He was a shock to the family. I still think even now my mum actually does, at 80-odd she is, 83 next, she didn't really know what. She thinks I just played football. She didn't actually know it was for a career, you know.
Yeah.
Funny. But my dad, he was so laid back, it was horizontal. You know, like you get parents who are desperate for the kids to get involved in sport, and he just said that, you know, do what you want. I'd have rounds of golf with him, but he'd come to watch me when I was at Halifax Town a lot, because it's not far from Skipton.
Yeah.
But when I got to playing for like Man City and Oldham, it's a bit far.
Yeah, so you know. He didn't. Well, before we get to that, let's go back to Burnley then. So you were picked up by Burnley.
Well, yeah, I was played sort of in the reserves, which was good standard then, you know, because you were a lot of first team players. You know.
So this is what, 80?
85, 6. Mm-hmm. Tommy Cavanagh was a manager and he was desperate to try and keep the team in the division, which he did. It was fourth division.
Burnley were a team of the 70s, former champions in the 60s, and then by the 80s, they were like Wolves. They were like sliding, weren't they? They were sliding through the divisions.
Well, a big historical Lancastrian club, but did slip and nearly went down in the first year that you could go down to conference. They didn't offer me terms. They just played me made my debut against Leighton Orient away, one of the last games of the season. I think I played like 25 minutes and barely touched the ball. And then in pre-season following that, Brian Miller, famous, you know, England and Burnley international, said, look, we really want you to jack your studies in and come in full time. And I did discuss that with my father, and that's the first time I've ever seen him turn purple. So didn't do that. And I just went playing cricket all that summer and then received a telegram, is the best way to put it, from Billy Eyre, assistant manager at Halifax Town, who knew my circumstances as a student at Leeds. It was a good network, you see, football, it's internal network, I must have been told, and then said, come and play for Halifax Town and you can continue your studies and look after you, and they did look after me quite well, you know.
What was your approach like at this time in terms of maybe, because obviously you're studying, and did you know at this age what you wanted to do, i.e. not being a footballer, but following what you were studying for, was that what you wanted to become?
I was toying with the idea of doing what a lot of lads did on the human movement 3-year BA, it was, a Bachelor of Arts, somehow, don't know how, it should be a BSc, but they would then do a PGCE and go into teaching. So I was probably readying myself to maybe do that.
And this was your dream, was it? You know, what did you want to do when you
dream,
were younger?
I wanted to be a rock star. I was a guitarist when I wanted to be Richie Blackmore or someone, you know, create hell and music. I just love that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would. If I could swap it, that's what I'd do. Uh-huh. So I had no real career idea.
Okay, so what was your approach to football like at this point? I mean, were you like working hard and like, because obviously we know with so many young boys, it's their dream to be a, you know, you've lived that dream and you know what boys are prepared to do.
I wanted to be a footballer, definitely.
Yeah.
But I didn't really.
But were you ready for the disappointment of not becoming a footballer?
Funny that, because my approach was I could do cricket, I could do rugby, I could do football. Okay. I'll enjoy it and I'll play it as high a standard I can, and I'll play my golf and I'll do my fell running because I used to win fell races. Win the school cross country is easy enough. Get back before the teachers, that sort of thing, you know. So I was just going to go at it full bore, doing my sport and whatever work in life. I had a bit like the approach over here in the Isle of Man. You know, you get some outstanding athletes who just settle into a cyclist or a runner and outstanding times, but he works for HSBC or something, I don't know. But it only dawned on me that I could do it when I started playing in Burnley Reserves and I decided to do it. Yeah, I thought, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's not as difficult as it looked.
With Burnley Reserves, was that you away from home or were you travelling from home to Turf Moor?
Well, just travelling from my student digs in Leeds, so just every day on the bus. But not every day.
There was none of this song we always hear about players all living together and
no, that's
Mrs. So-and-so's digs and things like that.
No, that's apprentice stuff. This is after that. So that's 16 to 18 stuff, which they still do now, whether it's a YTS or a scholarship, they will do the
16
to 18. No, I missed that, and thank God I did, you know, because I think I had a more rounded physical education playing rugby and cricket. I mean, they prevent them from playing now. They don't allow them to play at primary school age. So it's wrong, in my opinion, completely wrong that. So I didn't have that. I was a young man at 19 doing what I wanted, basically.
So you went to Halifax Town.
Mm-hmm.
You were earning money from football at this point?
Yeah. I was the richest student at Carnegie College by then. So I remember the first wage they put me on at Halifax was £125 a week in 1986.
That's a fair whack.
As a student.
As a student, yeah. I mean, I can work back to what I was earning in 1986, and that's a little bit more than I was certainly on at that time.
Yeah, and I'm still, you know, and Billy Eyre said, look, come when you can to train. But, I mean, the college course was a lot of physical exercise as well, because we had to, in the end, the last year in that degree, I specialised in mountaineering and outdoor activities and canoeing and dinghy sailing and all that, and it was a full-on hit. And we're still playing sport for the college. I was still playing for Carnegie on a Wednesday afternoon and Halifax Town on a Friday night. And nobody batted an eyelid, you know. And so it was very... Although we drank a lot of beer, we did one hell of a lot of sport.
If you'd had a choice at that point, if Halifax Town, let's just say, and they said, you know, you had a choice between your education and a career in football, at that point, could you hand on heart say what you would have done, which way you would have gone?
It wouldn't have mattered because... I only had a year to do in the degree, and I knew that I could do it by then. So I was going to determine to see, do the degree, you've got something to fall back on, even if it's just letters behind your name.
Yeah.
It cons some employer into thinking you're capable of working behind a till, you know. So I wasn't going to squander that, but I knew midway through the second year at college that I was going to be a footballer. You know, it was easy enough to work out that.
Halifax Town, how did that go? I mean, were they the fourth division at the time, were they?
Yeah, fourth division and a couple of seasons there, scored.
Were you always a left winger?
No, I sometimes played midfield and sometimes played up front. I was a goal-scoring winger, so I scored lots of goals. I scored in the second season 12 goals before my move to Watford. No, we were ripping it up. We had a good side and we rapidly went from the bottom of the league up to what would be playoffs now.
Yeah.
We drew Forest in the FA Cup and put a real performance in against Brian Clough's team, who were at the height of their... We frightened them, actually. Although they ran out winners 3-1 or whatever it was. And, yeah, it was a good side. There were a lot of lads who went on from that team. I could name them and people recognised them and went up higher as well, not just me.
So you had 2 years at Halifax and you got your degree?
Yeah, I got my degree, got 2-1 somehow. Qualified in for the degree in sort of like summer 87 and then played... Got a new contract, went up to £250 a week, doubled it, in 87, and then we set off really well that season, and we get through to March, and then that's when the big offer came in.
Tell me about that then. How did this all come about? We now see agents nowadays and things like that. How was that deal?
I mean, there's rumours, though, flying about and stuff in the papers. And well, of course, we all knew the Brussels Sprouts were there every week, standing in the stand, scouts, to everyone uninitiated. And the Brussels were there. And there was a list of them. These lists of who was watching would be lying around. And you'd see them consistently, these people. So you knew you were being watched. But you had to assume you're being watched all the time. Anyway, you've got to put performances because you want to move, don't you? So you just work your hardest and play like hell.
Is with playing, you would think that a footballer would be putting it in anyway, but were there times when you'd like, can't be bothered?
We're human beings. Not can't be bothered. It's just you don't. I watched the game the other day, and it was the Madrid-Bayern
game.
And I'm looking at defending and the coasting. I'm saying, get back and, you know, and it's just like they've switched off. You learn to put in a level of performance, yeah, but, I mean, if you know someone's watching, you're going to do it even more back in the day. And you needed a move. I didn't want to... Once I'd realised I was playing football for a career, and I just bought a house, which was ridiculously easy, affordable in Leeds compared to today. But I wanted to go up the ladder, so you're really putting shifts in. And then the offer came in. I always remember Billy Eyre brought me into his office and just said, look, you're going to Watford.
Not do you want to go?
No, there's nothing. Obviously, I wasn't going to turn it down.
Was Graham Taylor still there then?
He was just on the verge of leaving. It was a switchover. And his second in command, Steve Harrison, took over the reins and it just remained. The philosophy didn't change. It was Graham's club. It was a hangover of him for a long time, in a good way.
Yeah.
You know.
So did the deal, was it straightforward? I mean, and always you hear about players were getting a cut and things like that. You know,
it was 10% and it still is.
Yeah, and you did all the negotiating. Was your father involved at this point? Or were you a bit too old now for...
No, he didn't bother.
No, okay.
Sensible enough to work it out. And it just...
So you're, what, 22 at this point?
23, nearly. Yeah, so at 23, you're going to Watford, so...
What's it like going into that new dressing room? Barnes just gone, or was he?
That's the ironic
thing. You replaced John Barnes.
That's what they said because they loved wingers. You see, so that's what they spot. That's why they're watching me because my job was beat your man fullback, or not even beat him half the time.
Just get the ball over. Yeah.
And so to replace him, and they love wingers, so the fans took to me straight away because I just did that.
But what was it like for you going into a new dressing room with probably no one that you know and also players you probably never played against because it's a different, your higher division at that point?
It was really easy. My father's cousin, a branch of the Holdens, had moved down south to Hemel Hempstead, you know, 50 years earlier. So I went and stopped with my, as it was, Uncle David and Auntie Beryl. So I stayed there. And I basically just jumped in my Mini. I had a Mini Cooper and drove down the M1. It was not in the best condition, so halfway down it was rattling and I got out and the exhaust was dangling and I needed to tie it up. So I tied it up with a Burnley scarf that I had in the boot. So, and then got down into Vicarage Road and pulled into the car park and there were a load of lads stood there and the manager. And then they came in and it started creating mini holes in the exhaust by then because the Burnley scarf was on fire.
I was going to say it must be burning by
it
this
was burning,
point.
Burning, smoking, and it backfired a couple of times. And I got out, and this cloud, this long-haired Yorkshire lad with an Argentina shirt on and some white leggings and a pair of football boots that were acting as trainers. And Steve Harrison took one look at me and thought, must have thought, what the hell of a side idea.
Coco the clown.
First thing he did was take me uptown and bought me a suit. But it was easy. It was a great club. And
good times at Watford?
Great times, yeah, great times.
What made it great?
Characters. I mean, the coaching staff were characters. Tom Wally and people like him. He was mad. Great bloke, mad. Great knowledge. Been at Arsenal, Northern Welsh. Just hilarious.
What division were Watford at this point?
Oh, it was First Division.
Still First Division then?
Yeah, and I was pitched straight in. So 1 minute I'm playing against Scunthorpe United on the Saturday at the old showground. The following Saturday, first team shirt on, playing against Everton at home, who were league champions. Yeah, up against Trevor Stephen and Gary Stevens. And it didn't make any difference. It was just get on with it.
Did you notice a difference?
No, just the pace of it a bit. But also at times it was slower.
But also bigger crowds as well.
Massive crowds. Yeah,
yeah, but did, as a player, do you notice the crowds?
You're aware of it.
Can they affect your performance?
Well, they can if you let it. But I mean, you're too busy concentrating on what you're doing. You know, smaller crowds are often worse. I mean, the Isle of Man, if someone calls you TW something something, you can hear it.
Yeah, I think twit is the word you're looking for there.
So if you in a bigger crowd, you're not going to hear that. Unless the whole stadium gets up and has a nice little hymn about your exploits, then you'll hear it. But generally, you don't hear them.
And also, I mean, don't have to go into figures, but from 250 quid a week, you know, you're now getting a first division wage.
Yeah, it was double. It was double that plus appearance. So it was like 500 a week plus, I think it's like 450 appearance. So you made sure you played every week.
And were you a spender or a saver?
A bit of both, really. Mm. Being a Yorkshireman, you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I ask.
No, hey, do you know what? I have my moments, but I make sure I've always got some in reserve. You have to, don't you?
Yeah.
But I did some nice little things. I bought my dad bought him a car and that, and myself one.
Did the way you lived your life, did that change? Now that you had money in your pocket,
less student-y, you know, because at Halifax it was a student hangover as well. I'm still living in Leeds and my mates are there. I was more likely to go out more often at Halifax and do sort of laddish things.
You could probably get away with it a bit more at Halifax than Watford, I would imagine.
Yeah, Watford you couldn't. And then, I'd also been snared more by Jean, who was, you know, my wife-to-be. And she moved down after a bit to Watford, and we lived down there. But I bought a house. But we had family down there and stuff, my lot. But the training wasn't particularly any different, you know, and the routine. It was just maybe just a bit older.
Did you have to work on your fitness a bit more? You said the game was a bit faster, and you know it was.
No, I didn't. No, I was always fit. I worked on technique a lot with. I had a brilliant mentor, slightly older than me, and I met some, like I say, really good lads there. But I did a lot of work with Glyn Hodges, the great left winger,
Sheffield United,
and a good friend of mine. And we did a lot of technique together. And then Neil Redfern pitched up, who's a really good friend of mine now. And I was lucky enough to have two spells with him, one at Watford and Oldham. Mm. And we'd do a lot of work together. So we'd go out and do our own work in the afternoons. So that's where I really sort of decided that I could spend all my life doing that technique.
Am I right in thinking that, I've not checked, I should have done, but did you get any England under 21s, England, capped at any level by England?
23, no. I was sort of under the radar a bit. You have to remember that time, I mean, Barnsley was more or less left wing with Chris Waddle. I was only just emerging on the bigger scene in the first division. There was a bit of a song and dance when I scored the winner at Highbury during that first. I played in the last 10 games of that season for Watford in the 87-88 season. But unfortunately, they were in a perilous position and they got relegated. So I scored two goals. I scored the winner at Highbury, which gave us all hope. We beat Arsenal 1-0 there in a league game. And I sort of shot to prominence then. My name was everywhere, you know. But youngster from Halifax, I wasn't that young at 23, but scores winner. But it wasn't till Oldham that when it really career went mad that I got sort of like the shouts for the England B and all that sort of stuff.
Were you, so I have to phrase this correctly, but did you keep level-headed, keep your feet on the ground, or was it easy to get carried away with, as I say, with the fame and the spotlight and things like that?
No, I mean, I tell you what, I was massively into my humour and my music and that, and didn't do anything more extravagant than just a few pranks here and there. And, I bought an XR3i, if that's flash. I don't know whether people... I just got on with it and spend my evenings watching Laurel and Hardy and playing my guitar or something. You know, I didn't play in golf. Just didn't do anything extravagant. Of course, when we had our moments, we'd go out and party, but nothing ever... just stupid things would happen that lads do, but not
But that could be any bunch
anything,
of lads.
You know, decided to dismantle Tony Coton's greenhouse or something and rebuild it in his garage, but nothing more than that. So it was quite quiet. Oldham was...
How did Oldham come about then?
I'd sort of had a successful year and a half at Watford. There's a point where Steve Harrison admits, and he's rung me since, and we talked about it on the phone, admits he lost it a bit and sidelined the wrong players, and he actually apologised. So he sort of got rid of me and Neil Redfern pretty quickly. And I'd actually lost patience with him not picking me, and went to put a transfer request in, and very generously said, look, keep that in your pocket. Joe Royal will ring you in an hour if you go home. And so he saved me sacrificing signing on fee of a good few quid.
Joe Royal being the manager of Oldham at the time.
Yeah, Joe's manager of Oldham. So he rings me and I shoot off up the motorway, but not in a clapped out Mini this time. Got up there pretty quick in my XR3i, yeah. And they didn't need any persuasion. They showed me around the club. And
had they been watching you? Yes. How does that come about?
No, he'd been watching me at Halifax Town when I was there. So Oldham were one of the longest surviving members in the second division at the time. Couldn't get promotion despite all their efforts. And he was juggling dust, as he calls it, and always looking for players. Now, what had happened was he had a very good winger. He'd been looking at me, but they couldn't, because Halifax wanted 125 grand, which Watford paid, to go up to 150 when I made 50 appearances. Oddly enough, sold on about 48, you know. So they saved themselves 25 grand. But what had happened was, the story Joe tells me often is that Ian Stott, the chairman, would say, look, Joe, we've got a cash flow problem. You need to get rid of a player and find someone else. So he got rid of Tommy Wright, who's an excellent winger from Leeds. Mm. So he was like an inside left who'd score goals. Tommy went to Leicester for 300 grand and he got him on a free from Leeds.
Wow, so yeah, that's profit.
So it's 300 grand profit, but then buys me then for 150. So Ian Stott has 150 grand to play with in the bank for Oldham. And that's how he did it. It made sense, and I replaced Tommy.
Was Joe the negotiator as well? Did you know, at that point, was it all through Joe?
Just me and him in the room. Yeah, just contract, yeah. I didn't argue. He offered me, and it was better than the Watford deal, so I just took it.
And then, so they were second division at the time. But this was before the plastic pitch as well, wasn't it?
No,
was the plastic pitch was there?
No, it was in.
It was in. Yeah. So, okay. And how did you take to the plastic pitch?
Easy. Yeah.
That was like with, in terms of the way you played. That did the plastic pitch suit you?
Suited me because the way I developed. When I coach it now, I coach. I've done a bit of work with Jacob Crook the other day with the FC and showing him all the angles and gambits you do, and it suited me more because once you wrong foot someone on AstroTurf, it's very difficult to recover.
It was a very different type of AstroTurf back as well, wasn't it, to what we have today?
Like tarmac.
And I was saying that, and if you slid along it, you took half a.
Oh yeah, you'd know about it.
Yeah, there'd be.
You avoided falling at all costs. Not like now, when they fall.
So who was in the Oldham side then when you joined that? So this is now about 90, was it?
No, 89? No, this is 89. August 89.
Because this is coming up to like the golden period in Oldham's history, really. Yeah. And you were a part of that, amongst some fantastic players as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, what Joe had to do, because of that way I described about having to juggle dust, he would constantly be on the lookout for lads who played first team in the first division at big clubs, fallen out of favour a bit, and then go and raid them. Now, that wouldn't happen today because people would be sitting on such high wages, they wouldn't drop a division. Mm. But you could then say, well, I'm not playing in reserves here, I want to play for Oldham. So people like Ian Marshall from Everton, Neil Adams from Everton, absolute steals, you know, for nothing. And he raided Man City for old Barrett, Paul Warrer. Mick Milligan, I think he got him off a Mexican building site somewhere. But Andy Ritchie from Leeds, Dennis Irwin from Leeds, and me and Redders from Watford. And that's Richard Jobson from Hull, who had been at Watford, Jobbo. Mm. I knew of him. And suddenly he got this band of... They were lunatics as well, you know. That's one of the things about that Oldham team. They were all mad, which was great, you know, and fearless. And it gelled, you know.
And you got promoted?
Well, we had a mammoth cup run first. We had League Cup final, FA Cup semi-final, and missed out in the playoffs. Actually missed out getting in the playoffs by goal difference.
I remember that. And that was Leeds as well, wasn't it? When Leeds were in that time,
that
I think...
the year before.
I think that was the year before. Because I seem to remember Joe Royal saying, we've played 46 games, and then...
That was a couple of years before.
And it was a penalty shootout.
It was a couple of years before because... Oldham missed out in the playoffs, and then Leeds
on
did.
Penalties. I think, wasn't it? They say you play 46 games.
No,
and
I think it was just in a goal difference.
Oh, was it? Or it might have been on goal difference then. Or away goals.
Away goals, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was away goals.
Oldham had finished. I wasn't there, obviously. It was at Watford. Oldham had finished way above Leeds and ended up playing them in the...
That's right.
So they'd come third, Oldham, which would have been automatic. And then ended up being... Leeds would be seventh.
I the feeling when they first introduced the playoffs, there was one team above the relegation zone in the first division.
Oh, yeah, that was the other
and
way.
Then, and then the three teams, third, fourth and fifth in the
and then they
second division.
That.
Then they scrapped that, yeah.
Because Middlesbrough ousted Chelsea, so it didn't go down well with the southern authorities.
All right.
Yeah, but then when it became just the playoffs, Oldham lost out to Leeds and then Leeds lost out to Charlton, which, you know, rankled with everybody. But we'd lost out getting in the playoffs on goal difference because we were knackered. We'd played 65 games and not won a thing, and everybody was absolutely devastated. You lose a final at Wembley, destroy the competition, lose to Forest 1-0, lose in a dubious replay to Man U, second replay.
That's right.
And he's flat. But I went back and played a lot of cricket that summer.
With the clubs?
No problem with cricket. I'm not too keen on... decided to do the TT or something, but play a lot of cricket. And then we decided we'd just go for the league, and Joe deliberately put out weak teams for the cups.
Let's go back to that. You got to play at Wembley.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was
nerve-wracking, the whole can't sleep the night before that.
It was, in those days, it was...
Did you know you were playing the night before?
Yeah,
the
yeah,
team
I
had
did.
Been picked and...
Yeah. Back then, it was very rarely you got. To, it was like an achievement to play at Wembley, whereas now lots of people play at Wembley, you know.
And also live on TV, which was very rare back then as well.
Mm. We performed well. I just didn't get any luck. I mean,
was it a last-minute goal? Or
no, it was a goal midway through the first half.
Oh, it was Forest, wasn't it?
Forest.
Yeah, that was it. I'm thinking of the
semi-final. That second time at Wembley, we were far more comfortable when we drew 1-1 with United. Mm. Really should have won that.
That first one. Did it pass you by, the Forest game at Wembley? Did you breathe in the occasion and at the end going up the steps?
It happens fast. We'd played so many big games that year that it was... I mean, we'd played massive games, like knocked Arsenal out of the cup. We were used to it, but it was a great occasion. I mean, we were just unfortunate. But we were on a mission. I knew we were on a mission because we didn't celebrate. We had an open-top bus ride, and I said, what's the point of this? Absolute very good at putting my point across.
For a town like Oldham... You know,
well, the fans loved it more than the players.
I was going to say they would do. There was something for them to celebrate, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we can't forget that. And they did celebrate it. We didn't. We just disappeared. And I do that now. I just disappear. Not one for big celebration. I like to celebrate with
if
the
it's
lads
worth
and
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. But the second time, which is later on in this conversation, was, you know, that was far. I remember more about the second.
Tell me more about that second, because that was an epic game as well, wasn't it? Those games against Manchester United as well were, because you had the semi-final, was it at Main Road?
Yeah, well, the first one, semi-final at Main Road.
There was
the
3-3.
At Main Road, and when we lost 2-1, but we should have won 2-1 because we had a goal that was chalked out. Would be given
today. Was that
today.
The Adams? Mark Robbins.
Mark Robbins scored the winner.
That's right.
After Nick Henry had a shot that went over
the line.
Line.
That's right.
And then 4 years later, we are at Wembley in a semi-final against them, and we didn't win that.
Is that the Mark Hughes?
Yeah, Mark Hughes volley, 121 minutes. But we had chances to finish them off all afternoon.
Yeah. The 3-3 draw, only because I've seen it recently. You could have won that one.
Yeah, I had a shot that just went, clipped the outside of the post.
From about 25 yards out.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those, hit it with your swinger, my right foot, and probably didn't connect with it as well as I should, but it went at a fair velocity and it just swerved out. Because I've hit it with a bit of inside, so it's swinging away from goal. It's just clipped the outside of the post. So I'm unlucky, but it beat Jim Leighton. He was beaten, but... where it goes again.
Did you take disappointment well? You often hear about, well, it was a day out at Wembley, or it was, you know, but did you take defeat in a final or a semi-final? Was it really you're on the floor at the end of it?
Yeah, I think...
I know some players aren't, and I'm just trying to see where you fit into this.
I took it well in a civilised manner. I think it impacts your psyche a bit deep down, and you've got to get over it. And luckily, For professionals, you quickly get over it because you move on and you've got move to another club or and then you reset and another game even. If you you know, the best thing to if you lose on a Saturday is a Tuesday night game, put it right. And so you're constantly correcting. But no, it really rankled with us doing all that. We were famous. I was on Question of Sport, stuff like that. And it suddenly elevated and then to all disintegrate. But everybody thought we were one-off damp squibs because we'd beaten something like seven top teams in the two cup runs. Yeah. We knew we had the ability, not one flash in the pan, to dominate the second division as was. And
didn't
we totally dominated
it. Didn't you beat Coventry 6-0 in the semi-final or something? Or
West Ham.
West Ham, yeah. You beat them 6-0 in the semi, yeah. That's right.
Destroyed them, yeah. So we knew we could play at that level. So going back to the second division, we set off to get promotion and we won five on the spin. And we went 17 unbeaten, and we finally got over the line the last kick of the season with a to actually win a medal. Mm. We secured promotion to the top flight on the back of the cup runs.
So you were back in the first
and
division.
And that shreved everything. That really did shreve it. So we were happy then.
The plastic pitch didn't last long though.
Well, we had to get rid. Deemed it an unfair advantage. I can't understand that. We only went 65 games without defeat.
And what was your away record like? Then.
Well, to get promotion,
you've got to be good away and home. So.
You need at least a third of your away games to win them, and you need about another third draws. So that's what we did. Something like 23 home wins out, the 20 something like 20 home wins, 20 home wins, three draws, two draws and a loss, I think, and then eight away wins, eight draws and something. Although we had the accusation of having the advantage on plastic, we had to adapt to grass again, which is a bit of a laugh because we all played on grass all our life. We would train alternatively grass leading up to which game. Home game, we'd train all week on the pitch. Away game, we'd train around the back on the training ground. And you would get used to the different conditions. It was the opposition who approached it wrongly for their one-off game against us. But
did the ball bounce? Because I know the QPR one was always a big high bounce.
Third bounces over your head And Preston was a low bounce because...
I played at Deepdale, actually, on that pitch. I've experienced that as well. Because Preston used to hire it out to make money on the side, so we'd go and play.
Their manager, Beck.
John Beck.
Notoriously put sand in the corners so he could belt the ball into the channel and it'd hold up. And then Luton's pitch was very bouncy as well.
I played on that
for Watford against Luton, old First Division game. That was really bouncy. Hard work, that one. Mm-hmm. But Oldham's was a nice low bounce.
And Oldham, at this point, it's Premier League now as well.
First Division.
And then it became the Premier League. And Oldham Athletic, you were a founding member of the Premier League in 92.
But after the first season in the old First Division, I was told again... Peter Reid had been in from Joe's office. Peter Reid, you're going to Italy tomorrow to sign on because Man City are in Italy and you've signed for them whether you like it or not. And I said, right, that'll do me. Off I go.
So you're off to Manchester City and also, I think, for $1 million. Is that right?
1.2 when it all added up, yeah. Well, that's what the headline, sensational, 1.2 million. Whether it was 900,000 plus two players, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I think Neil Point and Steve Redmond came the other way. And I went to City.
There's something in the back of my mind says Euro 92 when John Barnes was injured in a pre-game and then Andy Sinton got the call. But there were, I seem to think you were in the frame to go into Sweden for the Euros in 92.
That was my biggest disappointment in my career, that I'd been selected to play for England B a couple of times, and funnily enough with Andy Barlow, who was the fullback with me, so a nice partnership, at Oldham. We couldn't fulfil it because our cup runs clashed with these England B games, which were played not on a way on a Tuesday or something, so we couldn't play. And then I was in the frame, I was top of the assist charts for that first season back in the old First Division, by a long way, creating goals. And they took Andy Sinton, who was basically a right-footed left-winger, instead of me. And I remember watching the Euros in some bar somewhere, can't remember which part of the continent, and I watched all the games. They never got one crossing in the three games, and they got pitched out in a disgraceful sort of manner, in the group stages. And I thought, well, Maybe they'll do it now, but it never happened.
Andy Sinton, was he one of Graham Taylor's ex-players as well?
No, I don't think so.
So what I'm thinking is, from my memory, is that it was live on TV. Andy was in the studio as a guest. John Barnes had been injured. Basically, they put the pressure on Graham Taylor to pick Andy Sinton. Mm. You know, are you going to give Andy a call out? And then Graham says, yep, Andy, come on.
One of the rumours was when Graham Taylor came up to Oldham after he'd been made manager, and he put a session on, and I think Ian Marshall told him it was clucking rubbish. I think we all got lumped in with that, and they didn't like the way he was. I don't think there's any truth in that. I just think he just mistimed it, and it all went, you know, a bit skew whiff for him anyway. And by 94, he'd had an absolute nightmare,
right,
hadn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe his recruitment, his selection.
Whatever.
But anyway, it would have been nice to play for England, but I mean, everybody knows that. If I had my time again, I would have gone and signed for Boca Juniors and got national sort of.
All right. Okay, let's get back to City. And City were a decent side as well at that point. Quite a few ex-Everton players as well, I seem to remember, with Peter Reid and Adrian Heath and Mark Ward, I think, on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, when I look back now, and it's a long time I've come to this analysis, that the Watford and City moves, they were great moves. But they weren't necessarily the great bits of football. But they had to be done. You know, I had to go. Halifax was great football. Went to Watford, had to do it, and great experience. And it was a great time. Oldham was great football. Had, you know, that was really important for my career. City had to be done, and it was a great time. I also had these two bigger clubs, in a sense, than where I was prior to that, were essential. And I had a wonderful time at both. I met up with Tony Coton at City,
because
he was at Watford as well, and I was good friends with him at Watford, and so it was an easy move to fit in with him, and I became good pals with Niall Quinn and that sort of thing. And so City was great, and I really enjoyed my time there. It wasn't that long, it was only about 15 months.
Do you think successfully?
Yeah, I mean, we played some great stuff, not like Oldham, but I mean, we ended up in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, which we should have got through. We ended up about fifth or sixth in the Premier League. But it was great playing for them.
And
we
Peter Reid.
Several tours. Peter's great, yeah, great.
But did he leave before you did?
Simultaneously.
Was Brian Houghton come in?
Yeah, well, I did well for Brian in the first few games, but I mean, he sort of decided he wanted to play a different thing without attacking wingers and sort of more controlled, sort of midfield dominant sort of.
So how does that work? Does he tell you this, or do you kind of work out and all of a sudden I'm not getting picked?
Yeah, and well, I went to see him. I said, look, you know, this is not on. I mean, I was in my prime. I was 29, approaching 30. And I said, look, you know, I can't sit in the reserves here, you know. And he said, well, it's Barrow in the morning with the reserves. Sorry, tonight. Barrow in the reserves tonight, or you can go and speak to Joe Royal again. So it was Barrow or Wheelbarrow. I ended up Wheelbarrow because went and got some cash from Joe.
What's your ego like at this time? You know, £1 million footballer, Manchester City, Premier League. What's your ego like?
Well, no, my ego's fine because I'm doing a degree in physiotherapy by now and looking at that because although I'd done well and we'd bought a house and were mortgage free at a young age, I still needed to do something because physio was ideal because I was interested in it. Perhaps half an eye on doing stuff in football, but it dovetailed very well with the human movement degree. And I did get some exemptions from certain bits of study.
Okay.
Physiology, anatomy, sort of stuff like that, which we covered. But physio was great, and I've always loved doing my physio. And a lot of lads have done it, you know, that's sort of sports science and physio. And I've had individuals over here. I've helped one young lady over here. She's done a sports therapy, and we worked for me a bit. Famous, she is over here, and did a master's degree in physio and dovetailed that interest together. So it was a natural thing to do. So, yeah, very much got my eye on the future, although I did buy another flashy car.
So your ego was in check, effectively.
It always has been around football, yeah. It has.
So you go back to Oldham. And then, you know, what eventually leads you to becoming a physio in the Isle of Man from this point onwards?
Well, I'll go back to Oldham and I've got another 4-year deal, so I'm going to see that out in my eyes. But so I had a roller coaster season getting to Wembley again in the semi final of the FA Cup. But I joined with them perilously close to the bottom. And losing in that semi-final sort of took the wind out of our sails, and we ended up relegated.
And the club were selling a lot of good players, weren't they?
Yeah, still. That's the other thing. They got the balance became an imbalance, and so...
And Joe Royle didn't hang around either, did he?
Well, he was being tempted with England and all sorts and turned it down. Eventually, Everton came calling, and it was too much for him. And I thought he saw the writing on the wall anyway.
Yeah. I remember City coming in for him and the big campaign, and Oldham kept him, which
was right. Well, no, he didn't want to... He had a job to finish at Oldham. He'd been there, I think it was 13 years to achieve what he did, which is a lesson for all clubs these days, you know, long-term planning.
But Joe left and you were still at Oldham and...
Yeah, and Sharpie and I didn't particularly get on due to a lift incident in Sweden. So he, first opportunity, he was actually putting me in the reserves. Then when he'd lost a couple of games, bringing me back in. And I remember he did the same to Andy Ritchie. We'd win a match for him. Like, I remember putting three consecutive balls onto Andy's head against Port Vale, and we won. And then he'd drop us in the reserves again. Try his model again. It had failed. Bring us back in. Eventually, I just said, look, this is no good.
Colin Harvey was there by then.
Colin was there, yeah, ruining another pair of artificial hips. I think he's been through about three pairs now. He just couldn't help joining in training at whatever age he was. He was great, though, Colin. Sharpie, I mean, I'd get on now if I saw him. It's just what it is in football. Yeah. You've got to be confident enough to go and say, look, this isn't working, is it? I need to go. And you do. And so I went and joined Sam Allardyce at Blackpool, you know.
In terms of being coached, did you learn? How does a naturally gifted footballer get coached?
Well, with a winger, you've got to... Because you are maverickish.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I mean by the...
You get coached. Like I said, I did a lot of technical work with Glyn Hodges and Neil Redfern. On striking the ball and all that sort of stuff.
And you learnt stuff?
Yeah, of course. At Watford, we did a lot of pattern of play, which I really enjoyed. And he developed it into... It was good, Steve Harrison. And developed it into crossing and shooting practice. And so I learnt my coaching badge stuff, as they do now, far better from a live experience being trained every day. So we'd play against the dustbins, as we called it. Nobody. So we'd line the 11 up and go through the pattern. And it more or less always involved me or someone like Neil Redfern or Roderick Thomas on the right wing crossing a ball and Big Dave Bamber heading it in or what have you. And then it'd go all the way back to the keeper, Tony Coat, and he'd throw it out to the fullback, Nigel Gibbs, and it'd start again into midfield. So you learnt a lot of that. And wing play, you've more or less got to be everywhere at the same time. I called it like being an electron. In your early career as a winger, you're often out of position all the time, grappling for it. But eventually the penny drops. And it was Eddie Gray in a spurious meeting that showed me how to do it. He was a legend Leeds player. And he was manager of Rochdale. And this is going back to me playing for Halifax against Rochdale. And in this end of season game with nothing much on it, I was on the left wing and he's the dugout there and he's coaching me as manager of Rochdale.
The opposition. Yeah.
I chatted him at half time and I'll never forget it. And he just told me to stand still for that bit extra longer, you know, to work out what's happening. Instead of running around like a lunatic, trying to get on the end of everything and be everywhere, and you just end up knackered. So you learn things like that. And then with Joe at Oldham, we did a lot of technical work with Willie Donaghy as coach. He was obsessed with passing and movement, but getting the ball wide to pass it, you know, with balance and lending the ball, expressions like that, I would say, rather than firing it. But again, because we got so good on the Astro because we were on it all the time and you knew every inch of that ground, you know, so you pick it up and if you've got half a brain, you'll remember it and put it into your own style, you know.
You went to Blackpool and Sam Allardyce.
That was interesting. I mean, I couldn't break the wage structure, but I got a decent signing-on fee. And then I was working part-time as well as to top my physio stuff up at a place called the Yorkshire Clinic in Bingley, which is outskirts of Bradford and Leeds. And they had a contract with Bradford Northern Rugby League. And so I got to do the bag quite a bit on pitch side for the club, reserves and first team and all that sort of stuff. And I had a year doing that whilst I was playing at Blackpool, topping my physio up. And the Blackpool was going great. I mean, Sam has a particular style, as everyone knows, but he was very into his sports science, you know, and he really did sort of get it right at Bolton. And I was back there with my old captain from Halifax Town, Phil Brown, who was the assistant to Sam.
He wanted to manage Hull.
I used a few visits at Kidderminster now, I think, with Dean Holdsworth. Spoke to Dean not long ago about I promise him go down and see him, but that was a few months ago. I will.
Your career's football career's winding down at this point, is it?
Well, no, I'm going full bore. You know, we're going to get promotion to what is the Championship, and unfortunately, I got injured, and it turned out I knew it was bad, but they didn't have much in the way of money. The Oystons were using their savings sparingly, to put it mildly, buying places in St John's, I think. I didn't get a scan on it for a while, and then it eventually revealed as a cruciate ligament injury. It was funny because the physio at Blackpool was a guy called Mark Taylor, who turned out to be a really good friend, and he was on the course with me at Salford in his part-time physio degree, Salford Uni. So there's me and him trying to work out what's going on with this leg, both clueless because we haven't done any rehab in terms of academic rehab. It was just a physio degree, just as it is laid out for physios that are just going to work in hospitals. And we worked out that there was something seriously wrong with my knee, because every time we tried to do something more than just running in a straight line, I just collapsed. And so I said, look, this is no good. And we're in a great position, and then we blobbed in the playoffs. I didn't play again after the 24th of February, 96. I said, oh, I've got to do something. I remember speaking to Gene and saying, look, this could be it. I need to get a job. I'm at the Yorkshire Clinic and someone hands me the physio magazine and says there's a job going in the Isle of Man. And so I said, might as well just apply for that.
So, the fact you'd been on holiday helped as well?
Well, we knew where it was, obviously. Yeah. I knew the script. I mean, I said, this would be nice over there, you know. Do it for a year. And yeah, great, we can rent the house out in Yorkshire. So I picked up the phone and asked, could they send me an application in the post over? And the guy that answered it was the head of physio, Ivor Meller, who on the island, everyone would tell you, is a world-class eccentric, brilliant physio, well-known. Anybody listening to it and knows the history of the Isle of Man will know of him and his father, because his father had a bit to do with Man United as well. He gave me the job on the phone. When can you get here? I said, well, a certain date. So me and my father flew over and did a couple of recces whilst I was recovering, seeing the end of the season out, and also went to Mallorca for a break, by which time Alex was born. He was a few months old. And then I came over in May 96. Just fully intentionally doing a year, rented in Farm Hill, worked at the hospital, enjoyed it. And then Sam Allardyce gave me a ring and said, I'm at Notts County now, if you fancy coming back. I said, I can't, I'm knackered, it's no good. Leave it with me. And then before I knew it, I'd played a season for Peel. Okay. You know, and didn't go back.
Why did you pick Peel, and how did Peel come about?
I didn't really want to play because I didn't think I was capable because of my knee. We fancied Peel to live when we'd made my mind up, bloody going back. It was just everything's ideal at Peel, it was then. Golf club, primary school, secondary school, and the football club looked really great, although you wouldn't recognise it from then to now. But I knew its history, and some clubs had asked me, but another legend at Peel, a chap called Paul Barlow, who was very knowledgeable at football and played in the great Peel teams, actually sent me a letter inviting me down. So I went down, and the rest is history on the wall.
Did Blackpool have to tear up your contract or anything, or for you to
do
that?
I just went on. I was literally week to week. I wouldn't sign anything longer than that. So I was just free to go.
Okay.
Although they tried to chase me for some bills which weren't mine, as theft of a wooden pig in a hotel. That's definitely not me. singed carpet, but that was nothing.
Didn't owe
them anything. I know exactly who it was who nicked the wooden pig. No, it was a quite easy severance, just off a go. And the famous young Biff Lowy, who's now in Canada, the secretary at the time at Peel, says that he managed to do a deal with Blackpool, and he's a Blackpool fan, for a £1 transfer fee from Blackpool to Peel.
Oh, right, so he's got
that in his locker as Biff.
I'm going to ask you something, though, because someone told me this years ago, I don't know how true this is, that you've only been sent off twice in your career. Like, one was against Arsenal and the other was against Ramsey. Is there any truth to that?
No, true. Yeah, one at Arsenal and one against Jim's.
Jim's.
But actually, it's not true, because Colin Moore pointed out to me that I was also sent off for exchanging punches with Tabs Tier against Castletown
in the match,
which I'd forgotten about. Me and Tabs, you know, like two Leeds United fans having a punch up.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that you've been sent off twice, once was against Arsenal and the other against gyms
and Castletown.
But you enjoyed, obviously you enjoyed your time at Peel.
Do you know what? It was, I just thought I would join this little football league thing. I thought it'd be a nice little sleepy bit of a hobby thing. And it turned out to be as mad as Oldham was, you know, with all these cup runs as a second division side. It was very mirrored, that magic season we had. And the whole town was suddenly red and white. Second division, they'd had a bad time. And to win the league, second division and the Hospital Cup and FA Cup, which never been done before or since, was magic. And we were getting massive crowds compared to now. And we'd going to finals at the Bowl were just sellouts, you know, 1,600 fans from Peel. It's bloody unbelievable.
The question I have to ask you now is, you've played Premier League with Manchester City, you play Manx football with Peel. How big is that gap between the Premier League back then anyway, certainly in the 90s, and the level in the Isle of Man? Is it huge?
Well, that's huge, but the gap, as we proved when I was working, helping the Island side out, from the bottom of the pyramid at the time, Football League Division 4 and Conference, isn't that huge. So the good players would step up in and out of that and still could. Obviously, Premiership...
Is it really huge?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, I think it's today with all the foreign players and all the top names, but going back to that time, City, a couple of years before, to playing with Peel, and were you finding it just as tough playing football?
Well, playing at Peel was very tough. I was playing on one leg because my knee was dodgy. I mean, it recovered quite remarkably what we did. You find it tough because you've got to get involved. So you're getting the ball is one thing. So if I went and stood out on the wing, I would never get the ball as much. But Peel had some really good players, and they were fit. And the fitness trainer, Frank Dunn, was brilliant, how he kept them fit. But they were really determined. There were some really big characters in that club as well. And I was a bit worried that we might get bullied a bit, but I mean, it was a version of Leeds United in the 70s, that team, and they didn't take any prisoners. So it was easy for me to play there. And I also did a trick when I looked at the pitch and I realised it was perfect for me because it's not the longest, it's long enough, but really wide. It's actually wider now than any Premiership pitch is, Peel. So I had plenty of room to operate.
Did you ever have situations where, here he is, the big I am, and players wanting to... Oh, yeah, I took out Rick Holden, you know.
No, apparently some tales have come back that they wanted to, but no, I didn't. I got more trouble off the pitch sometimes when we'd had a few.
Yeah.
And I got told remarkably. I can string two stories together here, which is one of the pitches we played on was the early Corinthians pitch by the side of Nobles Park.
Yeah.
The ball's gone out of play, leaving the ground, hits a tree and comes back in, and the refs play on, you know, and it took a bit adjusting to. And then I think this is Manx football, this is odd stuff, you know. And then David Rice, our midfielder, upends someone in the first minute of a game against Corinthians again. And he somersaults onto his back, this bloke, and the refs play on. And I thought this is different. Then in a pub somewhere after a game, someone who'd obviously fried his tonsils with a few came up and said, you might know about pro football, but you know, quite aggressively, nothing about Manx football. And I said, you're right, don't know anything about Manx football, and I'm witnessing it every week, sarcastically back. But I never really had any trouble with people. No, they were good. And it was very competitive then, more competitive than it is now, I have to say. And I say that not in any defence of the older generation. It just isn't. I mean, I like to say, to comfort the younger generation, I will say that the good players that have emerged, like someone particularly like Steve Whitley, you know, he's as good as there ever was. And the good players will be as good as they ever were. There's not enough of them, though, because there aren't enough good teams now.
Exactly, yeah. Part and parcel of playing Manx football on a Saturday afternoon was that camaraderie of going out for a night out immediately after the game. But that seems to have gone.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that was one of the endearing things, going back to those first incidents with people like Bobby Symes as referee, you know, and you had a good crack with him and, you know, he's the let-anything-go thing. And then, or Peter Lewis, he'd have a moan up about him, but he'd come and join both teams in the downtown in Peel afterwards. And, you know, I remember we played St Mary's in a particularly ding-dong game, FA Cup, and we won out winners 2-0, and it got heated and it got, you know, lots of passion there, but afterwards it was like for the next 4 hours around Peel and everyone together and sharing the experience of the day. It was great, you know. It was more of a social thing than it is now. I mean, now after a game, it's like the Formula One start grid in the car park. You don't see them. So it has changed.
Was there a point when you knew you'd played your last game?
What?
In at all?
Football?
At all? No, playing for Peel. No, did it all? What stopped you playing in the end?
No, because what happened was, as one's events capitulate sometimes, got divorced in 2002, managed to sort out, give the family home to Jean, and the kids were fine there at cloth workers and secondary school. Not long after that, I got offered by Andy Ritchie to go to Barnsley to be head physio. So I thought, well, that's a good chance to, you know, get some decent...
To move to Barnsley? Or
well, I had to move, to do head physio. Well, I didn't move my status. We had a cottage in Yorkshire, and I could use that not far from Barnsley, about 45 minutes in Haworth. So for 3 years, I was...
Commuting.
Mm. So I took the offer up. I actually just went for 10 days. And then Paul Hart, the manager, offered me the job. And so I took it, and Jane was happy with that, you know, that I'll be around. I must have travelled back to the island. I calculated over 50 times in 3 years to see the kids and end of season stuff. So I got elevated after about 9 months to assistant manager when Harty got himself sacked. He'd just had enough. And what a great bloke he was, by the way. Still is. So Andy became manager. I became assistant and head physio. Still did a lot. And I was fit. I was joining in training a lot with the Barnsley first team. And we were in League One then. When that all came to an end, when we'd got them to the Championship and we got promotion, it was great. And then I finally came back to Peel in Christmas 2006. I was immediately asked to become manager of Peel again, which I didn't really want to, but Chris Hawke said, "Here you are, you be manager, Rick," and he disappeared, you know, onto the golf course. Cheers. The end of that season, I played against St George's, who were emerging as the dominant force down at Peel, and I was 42. Played against a younger Johnny Myers and Sean Quay. And I did all right. I scored and we beat them 2-0. But then at 40, I thought, you know, this is, you know, I've had enough now. And that's when I knew then that...
Were you still enjoying it?
Well, I enjoy playing, yeah. But you don't enjoy the aftermath when you can't walk for a day. Still capable of doing it then. People like Nick Hurt, who's still, in my opinion, the best footballer I've seen over here, he'll tell you now he can still do it, but for the next 3 days he can't lift a brick. I could have probably carried on up to 45, 6. Didn't see any requirement.
Did you ever play for the national team? The
I got 9 games, yeah.
So you did get a cap?
2 goals.
Well, not, I'm sure.
I haven't seen it. I might have got one. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen anything from that lot. I get rounded up if a tracksuit goes missing.
So it was like Island Games and things like that, was it?
Steam Packet Tournament.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah. That was still going, wasn't it?
Because that was something that's sadly missed now.
Yeah.
I mean, go on to that subject. That's a passionate one for me. Yeah. You know, why they've let that go. It's one of the reasons why it's subsided. The standard Island game, but I mainly coached in that.
You had the physio job at Nobles, and obviously then you other things that were keeping you on the island apart from the Barnsley situation.
But I know I just enjoyed living here. And I went before I went to Barnsley. I'd left Nobles in '99 with an admin fallout because I just refused to do all the unnecessary paperwork, which is still clogging up physiotherapy now up and down the British Isles. Spend more time constructing physio exercise sheets than they do actually treating people, so we all know that one. So I left and joined Adrian Bailey, who's a good physio, excellent physio, and a good friend. I worked with him for a year, and then I went on my own up to Mount Murray and got offered a room up there, well, more than a room, and was there until I got the Barnsley offer, so it's like 5 years that. I was very much part of the if you look at the Peel bit, it was 96 to 2003 was a real halcyon period. I left managing in 2003 after we won the Railway Cup when Tony Duggan scored all four and beat Mary's. And those battles against Mary's just kept going on, which was great. I didn't do anything with Peel till 2007, really, so like 4 years, and which time the Barnsley thing was. But, yeah, I mean, I just continued to live here. And then between 2007 and 2014, 15, I was manager at Peel again. And helping with the island bits.
What I want to know is trying to kind of wrap things up with Rick Holden and the Isle of Man. Do you see that one day they'll be pushing you into a retirement home on the island? Do you have that affinity with the island now? Is it that you just can't get away from the place?
Well, you know, until there's better places to live, I'll probably be here, you know, because looking at it, it doesn't look like it, does it? And I've, you know, look, I've got lots of friends here and family here. My three kidults are now here, although one's in Brisbane at the moment. But I'm very content now. I've been with Celia, my partner, now for 20 years, and we're getting married this year. She's got family here, so there's no big desire to go off and live in Australia or Chile or something, but I certainly don't want to be in a nursing home here or anywhere, so might be sidestepping that one. But at 61, I am very active in the things I want to do, and there's no better place to use it as a launching pad than here. So I don't see any reason to look for pastures new. I'll be definitely taking more holidays, because this last bout with FC is just one endless nightmare daymare night. And I just
in terms of the times,
consumption has just been unbelievable. So I'll be freeing up more time to go on and off for holidays, that's for sure, whether it's walking in the Yorkshire Dales with one leg or sitting on a beach somewhere. But despite we all have a moan up, there's, you know, it's a safe and lovely place to live, isn't it? So why would I? And I'm happy tootling and helping along at Peel all the time. That's where I've got the practice again. And no, I'm not ready to retire, put it that way, but hopefully plenty of things to do.